You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hey, Mike.
Across the table from him, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Hello, Mike.
And next to him, we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
And we are doing another live stream podcast, gang.
Ooh.
So everybody we have. just so you know, we're doing a couple tests, and we're testing out different ways to stream the podcast. And as soon as we get it all down and we have the perfect system, we're going to open it up, and we'll be streaming every podcast.
Wow.
Today, our guest with us is Raj Kapoor.
Hey, Mike.
Hello, Raj.
How are you, Raj?
Now, Raj, he is the creative director, owner, the big man over at a firm called It Creative Services. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah, and they produce video, but one of their main things is they do like live shows, and Raj has just got done directing Dancing with the Stars tour, and he's going to be working on the American Idol tour that's coming up.
Wow.
Yep.
So Raj Kapoor, he's also a really good friend of mine. I've done a lot of work with him. So we're going to be talking with Raj a little bit later on in the podcast. But Raj, welcome, and feel free to, put your two cents in.
All right.
Cool. first thing I want to start off with is I just got back from New York. I went to New York last week.
Oh, how was the opera?
The opera was great. Let me tell you. The opera was great.
5 hours?
It was 5 hours with two intermissions.
Which opera?
I saw
torture.
I saw Wagner's.
Valkyrie. You flew for 5-6 hours.
Yeah.
Got off the plane, sat in a cab, went to the opera for 5 or 6 hours,
and he found that the Boeing 747
not like,
sound of the opera
was flat. But
not,
he also had really good seats.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That helped.
Yeah,
we had
a really good box seat. It was really good. But the thing
but
about
you
the,
could still hear it, right?
Yeah, there was no PA.
So it couldn't be that good then.
You could. The thing about opera is, first of all, it's an event. It's just the whole thing about going to the opera, getting dressed up, and having dinner, and it's just a really.
But can you hear everybody in the audience?
Well, yeah, you can hear that.
Everything's amplified, so, you know.
But which opera was it you were about to say?
I went to see Wagner's Valkyrie.
Oh, okay.
It's at the Met, and let me tell you, the stage, the sets were phenomenal. The sets were amazing. I mean, there's one thing that those people in the opera can do is stage design. I mean, they were amazing. It was truly phenomenal. And, you know, would I go see that opera again? 5 hours, it was a little long in the middle, only because that particular opera, there's not a lot of people. You know, there's a lot of times where it's just two people singing, maybe three people singing. But it's
and what
it was
language
a great
are they
event.
Singing in?
That was in German.
Okay.
Yeah. Wagner, what do you think?
Wagner.
Hitler's famous composer. He's going to be doing Italian.
No, he figured it's Wagner. It should be in English. Right?
Wagner.
It's the Reformed Temple version.
So it was a really good experience, and it was just interesting to, there was no amplification. It was all just singing out. So now I know why opera singers, have that loud voice, because they really got to project. The only thing that was a little ridiculous was the curtain calls. They did more curtain calls than I've ever seen.
In the last 2 hours was just curtain calls.
It was amazing. In between each act, they did a curtain call.
Really?
Yeah. And so maybe because it was so long, that's why they did it.
Some people maybe left, maybe. No?
So they, after the first act, they come out and they do their curtain calls, and you clap and everything. And so it's no big deal. And the second time, they do the curtain call and you clap and everything. And then at the end, they do the curtain call and then they leave. And they do a curtain call and then they leave. And then one comes out and he leaves, and another comes out and she leaves, and another person comes out and they leave, and they each do individual curtain calls. Then they come out as the ensemble, and then they leave, and then they come out as the ensemble with the little bit players that are there, and they come out and then they leave, and then they came out again with the set designer, And then they left. Jeez. And then they came out again. I mean, it was
yeah, little, yeah, we like you. All right.
I couldn't believe it was a little ridiculous. And it was all that, oh, you're too kind. Oh, thank you, you're too kind, that kind of thing. And it was just
bouquets of flowers and all.
Was it? Yeah, yeah, well, yeah. There's
so,
a couple
how do you
bouquets.
Know that when everybody left, they weren't still coming?
they may have been. I don't
thank
know.
You, thank you.
But it was, you know, it's old school culture. It's, you know, it's an art form that's been around, you know, for hundreds of years. And it was, yeah, it was just a really good. I recommend it for everybody at least one time. Have you been to an opera?
I have not. I want to go.
Yeah, it's especially for like set design. Set design is amazing.
Does rock operas count?
No, they don't. Rock of Ages.
At all. On any list.
Aw, come on.
but the opera good. One thing when I was in New York, and I wanted to talk a little bit about this.
Knishes
with you guys.
And cheesecake?
Pretzels?
Yeah, matzo ball soup.
Matzo ball. Pizza.
Carnegie's matzo ball soup.
Oh, hell yeah.
Awesome. But, you know, I went to Times Square and the Virgin store was closed.
Yep.
And because they're closing all the Virgin stores. And that was really
sad.
It was sad because the problem with Virgin store closing is it's not
Virgin?
Well, no, it's not that the store was making money, you know, and for them to shut down such a giant retailer of music, it just really shows how, you know, even stores that are making money were losing that physical place to buy music. And I just think that's kind of tragic, you know, the smaller record stores you can, you know, you're losing those left and right. But when you see a big store like that, an anchor store, and they're making money and then they go out of business, it's really tragic.
So now everyone has to get their music from Walmart.
Walmart, Best Buy,
iTunes.
iTunes.
Yeah,
but
it's mostly
I mean,
online.
It used to be such an event, though, to go to a record store.
Yeah.
Tuesdays, it's like I would be at Virgin every single Tuesday, you know, getting the new releases.
Now, what about Amoeba?
Yeah, I still go to Amoeba. Yeah. It's not the same, though. I mean, I like it, but Amoeba's more like research and find.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's not merchandise the same way, so it takes away some of the sparkle.
And you have, like, one of the biggest record CD collections I know of, because Raj, I mean, with all his live shows and everything, you were constantly buying music. And where do you buy your music now? Is it online mainly? Is that where you do most of it now?
Most of it. And then if I want something, you know, a better copy, I'll buy it on Amazon and have it shipped in, you know, a couple days. But I don't know. It's weird. It's like it's lost its luster.
So you're buying CDs from Amazon?
Yeah, I still buy CDs from Amazon.
Because a lot of the shows, you can't use the MP3.
Yeah,
although we've done it a couple times on a couple things.
We have.
The first time we were working on this one show together and we converted the CD to, I mean, the MP3 to CD, and then we digitized that, you know, that CD. And I remember we were sitting here thinking, wow, it was actually better than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah. You know, when I do my movies, occasionally we'll put a song, I think, on Game or Crank. I think it was Game, Citizen Game. We used a Marilyn Manson piece, and they go, oh, we got the MP3 of it. I'm like, it sounds like crap. I mean, compared to going to
– yeah.
And then said, well, we can get the CD. And I said, can we get the masters? I mean, can we go back that far? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean – but it seemed to be like everyone was like, yeah, but why?
Well, there's a huge range of quality differences in MP3s. I mean, MP3s can go from excellent to unlistenable.
Yeah, but if you're going to play it back in a big
– 320 is not
well
bad.
Get it, yeah, but you may as well get it as good as you can get it.
Sure.
Yep.
So it was just interesting seeing that store close. It kind of – because the one in Hollywood where I work right now, it's still open. But, you know, to see
the one on Sunset closed, though.
On the corner,
the big one on Sunset and Crescent Heights, gone.
Yep. Yeah. That was a good one, too.
That was my home.
That was, I love that one, too.
Yeah, it was a good hometown record store.
Well, and the good thing about Virgin was they had a lot of – you know, imports. They had
great imports.
A lot of records you just wouldn't see.
The bummer that is.
Well, you'll continue not to see them now.
Well, it's weird though, going to certain malls like Circuit City's gone. But
yeah.
You know,
Tower Records,
the record store. It's also like, you know, watching
Tumbleweeds.
Tumbleweeds going by in the mall.
I got that. Like, well, aren't you impressed? I got that.
Yeah, well,
has been Tumbleweeds.
That's nice.
Very good. So Bob and I, you know, we got the creative connection going.
So we're definitely seeing an end of an era with the Virgin going, and you know it's going to pretty soon.
I hate when
you're
the Virgins are gone. You know?
Wow. And I want to do this live? Wow. whose idea was that? The other thing that I wanted to talk a little bit about was, you know, since we're talking live audio, went to the couple plays, went to a musical.
Which one?
Guy, it's really embarrassing. Went and saw Mary Poppins.
Oh, that's cool.
And you know what? It was really great sound. And for a musical, because they use those little mics that they put like right here, or they put like right there, and I still don't understand how they can get the fidelity that they can get out of that mic. But it sounds, you know, those little countryman mics, but they sound great.
That's why I record my horses.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Actually, I saw that in an opera. I did. I was watching. I was trying to figure.
You get mixed up with opera singers and horses. Actually.
I do. I just, you know, they're all pretty stocky.
Right.
Yeah. No, I saw that in opera once, and I went, wow, that's great. And then I had to record some horses for Spirit. And then I figured, all right, how do I do that? And then I remember, opera singers. The mic's right there.
That's, yeah.
With an FM mic and go off and fornicate. I don't know.
To anybody not seeing this, which is everybody except us and the two people watching the stream, these mics are where? Like on the forehead or on the?
The mic. Yeah. The
yeah, you're pointing. That doesn't work on a podcast.
The mic is sitting there like right there.
Which is what?
Between his eyes.
Describe it.
Oh. Describe it.
Two inches above his nose.
This is not television.
Oh, yes. The mic is either tram mic or a it's like a DPA small. I forgot the number of it.
Right.
It's a very small mini mic.
Physically located where?
Oh, between the eyes, right above about an inch and a half to 2 inches above the eyes. Eyebrows.
Very nice.
Very good, Rob. I like that. It's very good directing.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you see that? Good job we can't see this sign now.
Wow, this is the last time I let you guys have dinner before the podcast. it was a great show. The fidelity was really good. The stage was amazing. It was a three-story house that they had on the stage, and it went forward and back, and the third story came down. And it was Broadway, boy. Those guys just know how to do it. Broadway in Vegas, you'll see some amazing things.
And Disney. They know how to spend the money.
Yeah.
How was the crowd?
And spend
was,
it. And
was
spend
it sold out?
The crowd was big, and it was sold out. And I will recommend, if you're going to go see, you know, a live production, you know, get the best tickets you can, because we were in the sixth row, and it was just a phenomenal experience being that close.
The seats comfortable? 5 hours.
No,
we moved on. Sorry.
Yes, we have moved on. And then I saw a play, and the play was it was good seeing the audio.
Cultured. You see, you go to New York, get cultured. I mean,
you know, if why not? You're in New York. You might as well, you know, take advantage of all the different.
So how long were you there for?
I was there for a week. It was really good. It was a good experience. But I purposely wanted to go see a lot of different shows because.
Did you record it?
What?
New York.
Record.
With your Zoom. Take a
just
Zoom.
Just wherever you were.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Oh, man.
Loser.
Oh, yeah.
And we'd love to hear that 5 hours of opera.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Especially the encore.
I'm sure you would have.
Thank you.
But it was really interesting just to see audio in the different situations where you see, you know, no audio, no PA in the opera to, you know, PAs over at the musical.
Reinforcement, though. That's
then, yeah, and in the play you see the audio that they have there. Although the play was the least, had the least fidelity. It was a lot of sound effects and things like that, but it was really hard. We actually sat up because we got the tickets that day. So we were in the balcony and it was hard to hear the
actors. It was a typical theater sound where there's like one 8-inch speaker behind the stage and the sound effects. Like,
No. You know what?
It's like this little sound.
No. Like, yeah. No, they're really, it's really, I was pleasantly surprised at the fidelity, and it was stereo, and it sounded really good. You know, they're definitely, you know, along with all the other technological advances in staging, that the live audio for production is really getting better and better. So, which brings us over to Raj. Raj does a lot of live events, and just to give a little backstory, I met Raj about, like 12 years ago.
I mean,
it's been a long time. And, at that time he was working on, you know, some, fashion shows and some small video shoots. And, And he needed someone who can edit audio. And I actually started off as video editing for Raj. And then I started doing some audio editing, and it kind of parlayed into every once in a while we do a gig together. But I will say it was really neat seeing as Raj's clients have grown and he's grown. He's, you know, he's given me a couple really good gigs. So talk about riding on a coattail.
Hey,
it's been, and one of my favorite gigs that I actually got through Raj is I was telling you guys, I did the sound design for Fall Out Boy last year, for their tour, for two different, intro videos. And that was working with It Creative Services. Like right now you're prepping for the American Idol.
American Idol.
And let's just talk a little bit about the Dancing with the Stars tours. Was it a live band, or did you have was it tracks, or how did that go?
It was a live band. All the tracks are laid down to Pro Tools first. They record the background singers. We take four background singers that basically sing all the leads on the track. So it's very similar to the television show.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a 9-piece band. But any additional tracks are laid down either by session musicians or just whoever's like mixing the Pro Tools for them to come up with samples and stuff. So the tracks sound as close to, you know, recordings as you can, but in a big arena mix.
So are you basically, you're set to a preset, you know, set list, and everything is pretty much dictated by...
The show doesn't change, and you know, all the singers and all the musicians are all on click. So the show's basically the same, and it sounds basically the same almost every night, except when you have a crappy venue.
Right.
What are some of the challenges that you faced out in these, like, crappy venues?
Staples Center here is a great example. It's like, you know, you kind of have a state-of-the-art venue, and you think they would have built it for sound, but it's one of the worst places to see a concert, I think, anywhere. It's like the sound – when I've been to the Grammys, I've worked on the Grammys, and the sound bounces all over the place. No matter whose concert I've been to, Madonna or whoever, it all sounds –
terrible.
Like, yeah. Not good.
They've put a lot of blankets and stuff, and you see they've draped a lot of stuff around there. But
it still doesn't help. It's like it doesn't have that warm, feeling.
Not
it's
all connected,
you know,
at all.
No.
I saw Prince there. It was the last show I ever saw there, and I said to my wife, forget it. I'm not coming here again.
Yeah.
Just sucks.
I mean, you know, I was at the American Music Awards at the Nokia Live Theater, and we did the finale of American Idol there last year as well. And that theater is so much better. It's obviously a smaller venue, but they at least paid attention to acoustics.
Yeah, and it's still big. I mean, it's still impressive.
Yeah.
So are you carrying your own PA, all your own trucks and all that? And what's
sound company using?
I couldn't tell you because I didn't contract. Sorry.
That's his assistant that would know that. But what would be like a big venue that was a good venue that you went into? Pretty much any other one?
Yeah, I mean, usually wherever we hold production, like even San Diego Arena, even though it's like old as the hills and you hate rehearsing there, at least the show sounds good. Like, you know, it's still, you're still kind of encompassed and the PA sounds good in there and they can get a proper mix.
Is it in the round kind of thing?
Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah.
It's not, but the stage has a really large thrust, which is the ballroom floor. So the performers end up coming up, but we have a regular stage area and then the thrust comes off that where the dancers actually.
Kind of like a ice show, kind of a push out, like an ice show.
Basically the same thing.
Now, are you having to, like blanket the floor with, you know, PA so that the dancers can kind of feel it?
We have a lot of monitors around. We had, you know, this last tour we had Tony Braxton who was.
Yeah, I just remember, you know, live sound and especially like something like Dancing with the Stars where the music is you know, it's the second character in the whole thing.
And we have a really good music director on that. He's Will Hollis, so he's music director for the Eagles as well. And those guys are pretty particular. So he's, you know, we have a pretty good mix and it sounds good.
Because live sound to me is, it's almost like voodoo because sometimes you work a venue and it may look like the venue you had the night before, but it just sounds like crap. Yeah. I remember like being on the road, well, with Stevie, some of the arenas. Some arenas sounded great.
Yep.
Some arenas sounded horrible. Some theaters, you know, sounded really good. And some theaters, like Fox Theater, you know, which is basically was like a chain of theaters throughout the U.S.
Yep.
The Detroit Fox Theater sounds amazing, you know. But some of the other ones that are out there just don't sound nearly as good as that.
There's a venue we played in Germany in like 1992, and I bet you his encore is still ringing out there. It's so live. Were you there?
I don't think I was there.
A gigantic rectangular concrete hall, right. And I remember the audience stood. It was all standing room only.
Yeah, I've played that gig.
Have you?
Yep.
It's just like
playing. It's called, it's like a German name, something
I've got
Messer.
The Altiverb setting for that.
Just set any reverb to infinity. I just remember
you do get used to the venues, though, because I used to mix front of house.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Bobby used to mix front of house.
Yeah.
How?
I mean, you're right. Your first night in any first venue, of course, is like trial and error. You think, oh, this is not the same as last night. Mm-hmm. But once you get used to it, you go, okay, we're doing that shed again, and
need to do is come in with plug-in presets for all the places. So you go, oh, you want to buy the plug-in preset for that theater? Do that for your house EQ.
I'll tell you something that might be interesting for anybody that wants to get into front of house engineering or is doing it, and I'm sure they're doing it already, but what I learned by trial and error, really, and by complaints, really, is that when you do a sound check, it's really important to sound check the room, and then when the room fills up, when your audience comes in, 10,000 more people come in, it changes the acoustics of the room massively. Yeah. That and also walk around as well. From your mixed sweet spot sometimes, you're standing on a wooden box which has got 3 dB bottom end, but you walk around and it's dull over here and bright up there, and you've got to mix for...
Well, a lot of times... Yes. Sound check is really a cable check because when it's actually showtime, everybody plays twice as loud.
I used to be a live sound mixer at Disneyland, and we were doing a show called Showbiz Is. And at that time, it was called the Space Stage Theater before the Michael Jackson thing. Mm-hmm. And the sound room was above an arch. So people used to walk under the arch, and the mixing and the lighting booth were up there. So I remember the first time I came, and I was mixing there, and I started practicing to get to kind of know the room. So I kind of had the music EQ'd and went, well, okay, let me get this thing sounding punchy and all that. So then I said, yeah, okay, that sounds pretty good. And guy comes up, taps me on the shoulder, says, follow me.
Come over, listen.
Takes me down, says, listen to what you got going here. And it was just bass and all the – it was terrible. So he goes, no, you can't mix to what you hear.
Exactly.
You have to mix to what you know, which is very strange because every mix you had, you hated the sound.
Yep.
But you knew it would work, and you know,
completely. That's really the key. Other than the actual engineering of the show, but that's obviously not that show. But doing timelines and doing different kinds of speaker delays because you have a big venue, you put some delays out there, and you'll be screwed completely. It's interesting.
Well, the one thing about a live sound mixer though that I was always jealous about is the fact that if it sounds like crap, they can always blame the room. The hall, it's just a tough hall. I mean,
the trouble is that people are like, but I saw what you call it last night, it sounded great.
I was on a couple rock and roll tours, and I just the decibels that some of those guys mix at some of those venues, though, it's just...
You have to crank.
Mm-hmm. But how can you possibly even function with, you know, the decibels as loud as some of that stuff is?
Sorry, what was that?
Earplugs, baby.
Yeah, earplugs.
So let me ask you a question. If you're doing some live sound, Bobby, where are your most of your problems? Is this going to be in the mids or is it going to be in the bass? I mean,
you have to define what the venue is. I mean,
if it's an open hall with like no acoustics at all, let's just say things are bouncing.
Well, it would be in all frequencies. I mean, but the thing is, here's the key is that if you engineer I used to be a PA engineer as well, but you know, if you angle the PA, if you've got a full range PA, depending what it is, depending on the height of your stage and the height of and the distance of the audience and how far away they are, you angle the high frequency radiating speakers to the audience, so you don't you try and avoid the high the reflective wall, so you don't go like that. If the audience is down facing you, face it at them, so your treble is controlled there, and the bottom end rumbles around. I think one of the biggest problems with new technologies, at least in the last 15 years, where they have sub bass units which are 18-inch speakers. You have these 18-inch speakers which give you a lovely low octave, which is really great, but sometimes so much bottom at such high SPL, sound pressure level,
right,
in a room, some people try and crank the volume up, which is a good point to a degree, where they try and kill the room's first reflection so much so by first ref- so so loud that the bottom end is so so overpowering that it just is like one large rumble, and you really just can't hear much. And I would say, to answer your question, all frequencies are very, very important, but if you strategically place your high-frequency radiators, your high-frequency speakers at the audience and the low frequency, you control it, because believe it or not, you can actually get away with a lot less bottom than you really think,
wow,
and it'll make your mix sound a lot better.
See?
I remember
this
when
guy's
I was...
genius, man.
No, I don't know about that. Hey, talking is one thing.
I mean, when I went back and was doing live sound, I remember Shoko, you know, the big
Shoko,
the refrigerators and all
Maryland
that.
Maryland Sound.
Absolutely. Shoko, but I remember when...
Claire Brothers.
I forgot which company came in. I was doing Tears for Fears, and they came in with the brand new Meyer system.
Yep.
And I remember I was doing Pacific Amphitheater and Irvine Meadows, and we figured, okay, we're going to need 3 stories, double hangs.
Definitely not.
And they said, we're going to only do 2 stories, subs on the bottom, with only 1 layer per story. Well, like, I'm not sure you're going to have enough power to power place. No, it'll be fine. And what was great at that time was we used to have to do all the measurements with all the speakers and angles. And they and these, they just said, no, lock them together. They're all... you know, mathematically figured out. We put it on. All of a sudden,
it's loud as hell.
It was loud as hell, but it sounded like someone's stereo. It was the fidelity was so high.
Wow.
That, and also because it was outside, so the sound once it goes, it's gone.
Yeah, the biggest hole in the world is outside.
But the problem I think they ran into, a lot of the engineers when I worked there, they weren't able to get the punch and the low end rumble like in a big stadium. And there's something exciting about having that big massive sound. Man, that sound goes. It's gone. It's not coming back, so you don't get as big of a sound.
Right.
So you have to do other tricks.
Let me just ask you a real quick question, Rob. When you pull into a venue and they set up the PA, do you do a walk around to check the sound quality, or do you just pretty much leave it to the sound guys to make sure the fidelity will be there? Do you make any suggestions or anything like that?
I mean, with me, if there's something that's not sounding right, like I'll probably speak to the music director, because most of the shows that I work on, you know, have a music director, and they haven't worked on enough rock and roll shows where it's just been the band.
Right.
So, you know, it becomes their department, but most of the time I'm so busy with everything else
that I get to
focus.
Last thing you have to worry about.
So here's a question I've got for you, though. You know, I used to work for Disney, so I know that Disney has a very interesting philosophy of sound levels. And now you've got 2 projects, Dancing with the Stars and American Idol.
Right.
American Idol's probably a little bit younger, Dancing with the Stars a little bit older.
Right.
You know, you may get 50, 60, 40-year-olds, a little bit, not as much as the 20-year-olds.
Have to turn up
so
for
when
focus.
You, so when you do the sound, is a certain sensitivity to the kind of audience coming in that you're not going to have maybe as much sub.
There is.
You don't want to overpower them. It's not a rock concert.
Exactly. I mean, the whole shows, you know, they're both like booked through AEG. They're the promoters. So I think there's a certain sensitivity anyways, because they do become family shows. And there's so many touring family shows that even everything. I mean, you know, lighting is pretty dynamic. But as far as sound, I think they play a certain safety issue. It's not the same system that's going in for Fall Out Boy. Right. You know, it's something completely different. We're not utilizing that really rock and roll like my.
So the kick drums are cannons.
Exactly.
But and it's damaging people's ears. I mean, that loud stuff. I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
But 15 minutes of that is permanent ear damage, and I'm sure, you know, people get. Take their kids. They don't want to go and like a 12-year-old get and sit in front of a PA.
I mean, we get all ages. I mean, there's 3-year-olds to 85-year-olds at both of those shows. So, you know, I think there is definitely a sensitivity there.
Is American Idol a little more aggressive, or is it they both?
It is. American Idol, as far as sound, it's a little bit more aggressive. Dancing with the Stars, because it's a ballroom show, you know, they still want you to feel the music, but it's not as present. It's like with American Idol, we're trying to make, you know, 10 kids into rock stars who were waiting at McDonald's, you know, 9 months ago. So it's part of the experience to kind of, you know, really put them in that environment, but we still have, you know, a few safety issues.
Well, hey, listen, we're going to take a break right now, and then when we come back, we're going to visit a little bit more with Raj, and we've got a couple other topics that we're going to get to. So we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by AFEX and Westwave Audio. have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the L.A. area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And during the break, we picked up somebody. Forrest, welcome.
Can we just walk in aimlessly on the streets? Come on over, Forrest.
Yeah, we got a podcast going.
Oh,
yeah,
man. Do you know anything about audio?
Sounded like a lot of fun, though.
Hey, Forrest, since you came late, you got to give us what your excuse is.
Man, I was in traffic coming from Malibu.
No. Women.
Please. Women. Oh.
Yeah, there were lots of women. Oh, no, my wife hears this.
What are you trying to
do?
No,
my autograph signing went overtime. Way overtime, man. Just,
I have that problem a lot.
Too many encores, you know?
So before the break, we were talking with, Forrest, this is Raj Kapoor.
Hey,
Raj Kapoor.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Absolutely.
We were talking a little bit with Raj about, some of the challenges that he faces putting on these big productions. Let me ask you, when you start a big production, how far in advance do you think about the sound and you think about the crew and the musicians? I mean, are we talking months, you know, weeks in advance? Where does that fall in your timeline of things you got to do?
I mean, most of the productions that I've worked with you, Mike, I mean, most of the lead time is usually a couple months.
Right.
You know, the pre-production with creative ideas, and then lots of times the productions we worked on, sound kind of drives the visuals.
Right.
So sometimes we'll cut the sound ahead of time and then give it to video guys for them to create or do a sweetening session afterwards,
yeah.
You know, depending on the complexity. So,
yeah, we've done some pretty cool shows. We've done some shows for Sebastian, and I'll put a link to your site because you'll see some video from some of those shows, and it's some of the most amazing visuals. Raj comes up with some phenomenal visuals, you know, and it's driven by music, and a lot of the music, one thing that Raj is really good at is his layering. You know, he'll take one song from somebody else and, you know, another song from another person, and we'll do some really cool layering stuff. And, it's really a fascinating to see how you do that. How do you start your sound design for some of these shows that you do?
I mean, Sebastian's kind of an interesting one because what we're talking about is like a huge hair show. So basically, we've done a couple shows at the Kodak Theater. We've done shows in Milan. We've done them in Paris. We've done them in Boston and New York. And most of the time, the crowds that come to the show, like Kodak Theater was completely sold out. So whatever that is, 5,500 people, 6,000 people, filled all the way to the top. And, what these shows don't have is a lot of talking. So we try and tell stories through imagery and through sound design. So especially those shows when I'm working with Mike, we'll divide like what the creative ideas are, what the marketing messages are, and try and divide them into segments. So if it's a half hour segment and we know we might have 30 performers within that half hour, it's got to tell a story. So one of the best ways to do that is through audio and through sound design. And we do a lot of like audio effects, whether it's, you know, footsteps going into like a little bit of slam poetry that might be spoken live into like a whole aerial section and what the audience is supposed to experience with that aerial section. It's like, you know, are they supposed to feel sad? Are they supposed to feel uplifted? It's like, you know, we try and have this whole emotional core, and it's all done through music and sound design. And those are some of my favorite shows because basically they're almost 2 hours long, and the amount of music and the amount of editing, and I can't even tell you how many edits and how much mixing we had. I think sometimes we had like, you know, 18 channels of audio at some points. You know, they're cool. They're little masterpieces in their own. I'm super proud of that stuff.
And there's a lot of reverb.
Yeah, I love reverb.
I know. When all else fails, just add reverb.
Oh, I love it!
But the real interesting thing about working with a client like Raj is, there's different audio opportunities that are out there that people, you know, if you're wanting to get into audio and you want to do different things, there's a whole segment of live production, of live sound, not just, you know, working the, the board, but sound design and, you know, for live productions and for Broadway and for shows like Raj, it's a pretty intense little gig. More than one time I've showed up at his house at 7 a.m. Here's the CDs.
With the final mix.
Well. But it's definitely, you know, I want to encourage people out there, if you want another venue, another avenue for a job, you know, go to the local theater and see what kind of shows go through town. Because, you know, audio is really important, especially in these shows. But I will say your visuals kick butt. I mean, they're amazing. And head over to the website and you can see some, I'll put a link up and you'll see some really good examples.
I think it's good advice you gave, inadvertently in a way about going to a theater even if you work at a theater and not necessarily do audio just for a couple of months or just whatever. You just learn to know what a prompt is or, you know, what lights are and what the names of trusts are just to get the, cause I think you learn the vibe of real stage work.
And again, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, with theater as well, there's also a lot of room for employment and other areas to kind of expand what that is in this whole corporate world. And I've worked in corporate as well as, you know, rock and roll almost like 19 years now. And some of the, you know, what some people call corporate theater is pretty amazing. They're kind of one-offs. And sometimes the amount of effort that goes into, you know, a single production could be bigger than a tour sometimes. Yeah. You know, last year when General Motors had money, we did a huge show. We did a huge show, and it was a one-off. It was the beginning of Detroit, you know, auto show. There was Mary J. Blige, Maroon 5, Kid Rock, Reverend Run, you know, 19 cars, 40 models, 6 fashion designers, all in a one-hour show. And it's like, it's so much entertainment. And again, like, you know, the audio mix for that show, knowing that you had, you know, 3 live performers all with totally different, you know, necessities, like what they actually require, and that the sound actually sounded good. And we had a DJ for the interstitials in between, like the band changeovers, you know, and that was all happening in a 1 hour format. It's cool. It's like you just have to know, but there's always, I think, room for exploring, you know, new markets.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one thing is if you work, well, especially on a show like Raj, which is totally music edits, for one thing, it's really, you got to have a great sense of timing, and it's only going to help you in anything else that you do, because you have to hit those beats, and some of the most difficult music edits that I've ever done have actually been in shows for live production. And you've got dancers that, you know, they feel it, they know the timing, and when you're editing music for a live production, it you know, you cannot be off because it's going to throw their dancing off and they're not going to feel it. And it's just really interesting. And it's really, I mean, I really enjoy working on those shows. I wonder why you haven't worked with me in over a year, but that's okay.
Because you said you have to have timing. That might be why.
And so now you're prepping for the American Idol tour.
We are. We're starting some creative ideas, and hopefully the first pass at, you know, the intro sound design will be done next week, and then coming here to my friend Mike so he can actually help with the rest of it.
So. Oh. See? That was the whole thing.
I wanted to get a gig.
That technique next time.
And now I have it on tape. how is it working with those young performers? Can you really tell how green they are? Are there things that they do that you're like, you know, you shouldn't put your mic in the monitor or something?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, probably 1 out of 10 this year has ever worked with like in-ear monitors. So that'll be a totally new experience. They don't use them on the show. So
that for takes
them,
a while to get used
to. Wow, hard to sing with too.
How long do you spend staging?
We have production rehearsals only for about 3 weeks. So I'll start seeing them June 9th. Actually, sorry, band loads in June 8th. We start rehearsals with them June 11th. Our first show is July 5th. Wow. So it's pretty quick turnaround, you know. They don't have that many songs to learn because there's 10 idols on the road. So, but still, it's like, you know, they're not used to the band they play with on the television show is completely different from the band we have. The band that goes on the road is really amazing. They're all, you know, session musicians that play on everybody's tour. So these kids kind of get like the best of the best for their first big rock and roll experience. You know, they play, it's all arenas, you know, most of the nights, if it's a light night, maybe it's 10,000 people. Most of the nights it's 12. If it's a really hot city, it's, you know, 15.
Wow.
It's like, you know, they're big crowds, and these people love the show. So for them to even to be able to perform, it's like these kids scream like crazy. Like last year, David Archuleta and David Cook, I don't know if you could be to a louder concert except maybe Jonas Brothers, but it, like the screaming is absolutely deafening. And
how long is the tour?
The tour is 53 dates, and they do it all in like 2.5 months. So they go.
Wow.
They crank them out.
Wow.
They usually do 4 to 5 shows a week. So they're going.
So you've got a couple of trucks overlapping?
No. It packs up every night, and it's gone. It's like this year night. We have like seven trucks. But it, yeah, it gets, I mean, all these tours that I've been on lately, like everything gets packed up. You know, they're basically out of the venue 2 hours after the last song. It's on the road, you know, and they're on to the next
city. Yeah, the loadout is a pleasure, that's for sure.
So it's fast.
I hated loadouts. Rob didn't have to do loadouts.
Well, I didn't have to do loadouts. Once Mike came along, I didn't have to do loadouts.
I was loading out for Rob.
I didn't have even before that.
No, I know. Hey, let me ask you, since, you know, this is the Audio Nowcast, and we talk about disasters a lot. Have there ever been any, like, technical glitches during the tour that you're like, even recovered from, or that you never recovered from? I mean, anything go wrong, or is it pretty much nailed every time?
No, I mean, I can't say I've had a real like audio disaster on tours, but I've had a couple like audio video playback issues on like big corporate shows where it's just gone really wrong.
Okay, can you tell us one of them?
Just with something like not I can't recall offhand, but it was a huge show. I want to say it's at the MGM, probably for, you know, 2,500 people, CEO, big video role, and for some reason the video that has like a lot of importance is patched incorrectly.
Oh, yeah.
So they start playing the video and there's absolutely no audio coming out. And it's part of the major part of the presentation, and they have to re-rack. It's not right the second time, and, you know, the third time it finally goes. But it's, you know, those things, is like everybody on production is basically responsible, no matter what your department is. It's like they're all looking at the next guy because something is going wrong.
Right.
And, you know, basically the entire company's on the line because, you know, the president is unhappy.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine a tour like Dancing with the Stars or American Idol, you do so many of them, after a while it's just, you know, it just comes in a rhythm. And
are you at every show, or do you just set it up and let the show go?
I usually go the first, like, 4 cities, and then I'm done. So, and then the tour manager and everybody else takes
the big dog. When you're on the show every night, it's like, you know, what is it? Oh, it's Wednesday. It must be like Dallas. Yeah. So you don't know what.
I mean, they're really strict with schedules too on American Idol because the kids have PR. And so sound check is at the same time every day unless there's something really wrong, you know, if something didn't go correctly. But they basically have the same amount of time for sound check. The band sound, like everybody sound checks. It's not like you're waiting around for, you know, a celebrity to come
organized.
In and sound check 5 minutes before doors are open.
You know what's really good too for each of those new idols is it teaches them what their first solo tour won't be anything at all like.
It's true.
That's true, huh?
I mean, I can't imagine having that be your first tour and then realizing what it's like as a new artist to actually go out.
Yep.
Play the troubadour.
Yeah, if you're lucky. No.
Well, you know what's amazing too is that's a, you know, there's two types of tours when you work in the road. You've got the American Idol tour where everything is planned, and then you've got the Stevie tour where you're like, okay, let's see what kind of
where nothing is planned except the date and the time. And the time is movable.
Well, it's I mean, it wouldn't go that bad, but it's like sound check, no sound check. Load in at 8, load in at 7, noon. You know.
They'll say load in at 8, and you really honestly have to ask AM or PM.
But
that's good.
And then during the show, you know, the Stevie show was like, the set list was just a suggestion. You know? Yeah. it went all over the place.
We used to just say the set list was the only list you knew that it wouldn't be. Right? You know, anything else could go. But you know what? The audience likes a spontaneous show, too.
And in the end, you know, on both of these, they both, you know, you get a great show out of it.
And there's something to be said about the unstructured show, rock and roll at least, where the band could do anything.
It's a little more fun rather than...
Yeah. Well, especially the band's playing and click. If it's all clicked out and all the lights are like... I mean, it looks great. I do... Obviously, we all like that kind of high design sort of stuff, and the guy's playing in time.
The bands
like,
get bored.
But everybody's bored and like, don't go an extra 8 bars because the lights are not going to work. We've got a tape roll. It's like,
A friend of mine, I can't name the artist, but he was a drummer for a major artist. And he kind of hated it because he said it was the exact same show every single night. Exactly. And he said, I'm in a show, like a play, rather than in a concert.
Exactly.
You have to do the same feels, like particular feels.
Oh, yeah.
With some of these artists, too, you cannot stray.
You don't stray.
Trust me.
There's an older established female artist who when she would do her show, she would have all of her repartee with the audience on teleprompters or on cue cards. And every night, I had friends who were on this tour, and
I know this is
every night it would be exactly the same. And like if a comma was left on a cue card, she'd say, oh, there's a comma missing from that cue card. But every night the jokes with the audience would be identical. And to the band, I mean, they're all getting paid well, but they just said it was like a mind-numbing experience because – every night, everything was the same. I mean, everything except marking the inhaling and exhaling.
Was she a funny girl?
I heard she was at one point.
Like, welcome, blank.
But it's not, you know, that was a reputation, but it's really true. And that just, the music can be incredible, but the show gets kind of stale really quick. And let's face it, especially for a big artist, there are plenty of people who went to see Stevie over and over again.
Right.
And it's nice to see the same artist and get a different show every night and get a different energy and not have it – I mean, otherwise, just get a DVD.
But it's not good when your audience sings along with your jokes.
Well, yeah, that's true. They're reciting them along with you.
I mean, one of the problems, though, with the big shows, though, now is they're being so driven by video content. Yeah. And so unless your video content's very general, you know, you have the flexibility. Like, U2 will design their content so it's flexible. And they'll change their set list every night, and their programmer and stuff knows enough to change the show.
Right.
But if you're working with – well, not that you have to worry about the audio with Britney Spears, but but an artist like that, the show is so specific and the video packages are created so specifically that there really is no room.
That's true. That
because the installations are so huge and the visuals are so important to the audience experience that
– well, otherwise that they have to pay attention to the artist. Yeah. So, yeah.
But well, no, it's all going to be tied together.
There was an interesting documentary. I saw a documentary this weekend, which because I like the band, is Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And they said the making of the Genesis tour, the comeback, and it was fascinating that they put it out there because it wasn't all very
nice.
Yes,
that's what I heard. I can't wait to see it though.
You know, everything from Phil Collins getting on the drum set and they go, "Wow, I don't know how to play this anymore."
Yeah,
and then you know, and Chester Thompson's going, "You got to practice." You know, this stuff's not that easy to do. And just the realization of,
see that. Oh, my gosh. I love Genesis.
But what I loved was they sat down with the designers, and I remember the first thing was Gray said, oh, we're going to put you in a pod. We're going to raise you above the audience. We're going to move you through the audience. And this guy's doing this whole spiel, and they're listening very nicely. And was it Tony Banks? He goes, I'm afraid of heights. and then the thing is, and it was great because the documentary – had a good 10 seconds of dead silence. Like, because they went, that was the whole pitch. Like, oh. And it was, and then they go, well, why don't we come back and, well, oh, okay, well, and Tony goes, sorry, you just can't do that. And then they went, all right, plan B, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely live shows. You go to a live show today and, I mean, what do you guys think? Is the production just overpowering a lot of these acts? Of course, some of these acts, like you said, like Britney Spears, it's all about production. But it just seems like sometimes, you know, you get so much video, you get so much production.
It depends on the band.
A lot of it's too canned,
Shows are shows.
Yes.
Where there's dancers and there's videos, and it's a live show experience.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that.
Then there's show. Then there's concerts,
right,
where you want to hear a band play something neat. You want to hear the performances. It may be like with Stevie, where it's not always predictable. You're going to get a different performance every night, and you want to hear what they do. It's less of a show. It's a bunch of four, five, six, a dozen people on a stage.
But
playing.
The truth is, though, like the video aspect of the show can become a performance too. You can have a really good video mixer. You could have the drummer triggering video clips. I mean, you could. There's all kinds of things to do besides just playing a video that's putting out a click that the band just plays.
Yeah, but outside of the 25th row, everybody starts becoming a half inch tall, mm-hmm. and then really the show becomes lights and video. Because you really can't see the band, so it's not like you're watching his fingers play or you're watching him sing. You can't even see him
if they have
the
big,
you're totally right about that.
Unless you're in a House of Blues kind
of
place.
House of Blues is the venue.
Yeah, but if you're in a Staples Center or any concert hall, you can't see him anymore.
My favorite artist is Pete Gabriel, and I've seen him a couple of times. And I think he's got a lovely combination of it.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of spontaneous crap going on,
right,
and he's got a lot of video that he can control, and he does control, and it's just interesting, and I think he's got the best side of
that's the best way to use video.
But, I agree. But on the other side, I think one of the best performers that you can ever see with the least amount of video is probably Stevie Wonder. I mean, he can put on a show that with just him and the piano that will absolutely captivate you.
But that's what he does. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to sit there and Stevie's going to dance around a little bit.
No, he dances.
Yeah, on a scary night, he'll even stand on the piano bench. The biggest moment of terror for the audience. Yeah.
Listen, I think Rob, for a while, had the hardest job in rock and roll because he was given stage directions to Stevie Wonder as Stevie's walking around. I mean, you know, tell him some of the stories about having to walk him around the stage and make sure he faces the right direction.
I would always say things like, if he was – the whole idea was for him to be able to walk around the stage freely and for the audience to always be a little on edge, like, does he know where he is? Does he know what he's doing? So he would get out from behind the piano and walk up to the front of the stage, and I would say, you got 3 feet. 2 feet. I had a mic that was going into his ear monitors, and he was one of the first artists ever to use in-ear monitors, and they were really tiny and custom-made for him. It didn't look like he had anything in his ears, but I would talk him to the front, and I'd say, 4 inches, 3 inches, 2 inches, and I'd get him right to where his toes were, and then I'd say, a little to the left, a little to the right, and then he would turn a little bit, and excuse me. And at one point, we had a stage when his show was in the round that was a the stage represented the world, and it had a map of Africa that was the raised part of the stage. And at one point in the show, he would walk up to – I forget if it was the top or the bottom of Africa, but it was basically about a 4-foot drop in front of him. And I would walk him right up to the edge of the stage, and I would look out, and I'd see the audience getting really nervous. Okay, he's singing the song. The band is playing, but he's walking up towards this sort of precipice where – you take one more step and you're gone.
Did you ever go, sorry, Steve?
Never was.
No,
I like to say I never lost him. But he would step right up to the edge, and I forget what song it was during.
I don't remember.
But right when he'd get to the edge, you could tell the audience was nervous, and then I'd say, go, you're there. And then he would jump in the air and purposely land down, in the area below where he had been. And he would do it perfectly every night, and the audience would lose their mind. Because at that point, you realize the joke is on you. He knows exactly where he is.
Yeah.
And it was a great part of staging. And actually, for a blind guy, his staging had a lot of visual aspects. I mean, he had good designers, but he also came up with a lot of ideas that were visually really cool.
Did they ever have any textures on the floor to aid him where he is, all of a sudden, if it's graded,
like
he
Braille
knows.
Sort of Braille stops.
We did have that. We experimented with all kinds of things, but for a while we were trying sensors that could put out tones based on where you were, and the floor had different feelings.
Because I can imagine all of a sudden it's soft and it hit the grating. Anytime you hit grating, you're near an edge.
Yeah.
And then anytime you hit air, you're over the edge.
But we had
Wiley Cody.
We had a lot of tricks set up so that the audience, so that he'd feel comfortable, like he could go anywhere.
Yeah.
And after a while, the audience would just feel comfortable that he knew where he was and he would go anywhere. But he used to like to play with that. He I mean, he's still, anytime you see him on TV, he'll tell blind jokes. You know, he likes to kid around, and he is a practical joker, but he used to do a lot of really cool things with staging. But the truth is, when the technology would break down, which would happen sometimes because it was such a complicated show, all he'd have to do is go to the piano and play and sing, and he could hold the audience for 2 hours like that. And that's a nice fallback to have.
He's an artist.
Yeah. And you know what? And I got to give props to Rob, because Rob, he literally was Steve's guide through the whole show, because he'd read him the set list, and he would it was like a pitcher, because he would mention a song, and Stevie would either shake it off or start playing.
That's right. I was like the catcher, because I would have to make sure all the computers were ready. We had a lot of technology on the show, and some songs had samples to load, and he would never he would never lip sync or anything like that. But there were a lot of sounds from the album that we needed samplers for. And some of these were synclaviers and waveframes and fairlights and things that would take a long time to load. And so I would always tell him what songs were ready. And then he'd nod. He'd let me know what he wanted to do next. And sometimes in the middle of a song, he would, in the middle of a lyric, sing to me real quickly what song he wanted to do next. So while the synclavier was playing, the Luther Vandross vocals on Part Time Lover or something, he'd whisper some other song, and I had to be listening constantly. And I will say, there was a time, there were a few parts of the show that were medleys that were rather long, and they usually didn't change. And the idea was, if he would whisper something, he would figure that I'd understand it, and I'd adjust, and I'd try to get that song loaded in time. And some of these songs took 2 or 3 minutes to load. But there was one part of the show that was a medley, and we were somewhere in Asia. And this medley, he never would interrupt the medley. It would be the same every night. And I used to use that time to run to the bathroom if I had to. But I had the same wireless ear monitors in my ear as he did. So I would basically wear them into the bathroom. And we're in Asia someplace, and I just remember the catering had been less than stellar. And I was able to wait until that medley came. But then I needed to make a run, exactly, as they say.
Right.
So I'm in there figuring I've got about 15 minutes, and he calls for a song change. And I'm sorry, but at that moment I wasn't able to get back to the stage. And I couldn't talk to him because the mic wasn't wireless. I had a wired mic on the side of the stage. And I just remember him calling for the song change over and over. He tried like 5 or 6 times, and then I never responded. And so he just went on, it wasn't a big deal. But I've never been so sort of frantic. I'm there thinking, he wants a song change. There's 15,000 people out there, and there's absolutely nothing I can do about it.
Just about getting caught with your pants down.
Well, pretty much. And later he asked me what happened, and I told him, and that was fine.
Well, you want to hear something funny? There was a gentleman that filled in after Rob left. So Rob was with him on tour. Then Rob was doing something else. I don't know why you weren't doing some American shows, but this is when Derek was filling in. Well, on one show, this was at Detroit. It was at the Fox Theater, as a matter of fact. It was catering again. Derek got sick.
Yeah, we did have catering issues.
And during the show, he got sick and he started throwing up. And so, the equipment manager, his name was Mick, came over to me and goes, Mike, get behind the microphone because Derek's sick. And I remember, and I had been with Stevie for a little bit, but I didn't have the best rapport with Stevie. And I remember I was on the monitor side of the stage, and I went all the way around back behind, and I went and I sat down in Rob's seat. And, I had been backline tech for about 7 years at that point. And I've done a lot of big venues, but when I realized I was sitting down talking to Stevie Wonder,
it was like, where's
Rob's voice?
Exactly.
And also, if you happen to walk him off the stage head first into the audience, you're a bad guy for life. At that point. You don't want to be the first one to do that.
Well, thank God I didn't have to do that. My biggest thing was, number one, I just wanted to make sure that he played the next song so I didn't have to go guessing. And number two, I just didn't want to have to feed him lyrics for Pastime Paradise, because there was no way I would have known how to do that, because Rob used to feed him a verse. He'd say one line while he's singing another line. It was really bizarre.
Well, he has an amazing ability to listen to a conversation and then be singing completely independently. Wow. So you can tell him lyrics like one line ahead or 4 or 5 words ahead, and he can be listening to you and completely paying attention but also singing
yeah,
you know, full out with all his heart, and the audience would never realize what's going on. But, you know, how many shows has he done? A billion, you know, at this point?
And thank God he probably just didn't even pay attention to me, because he just kind of went from one song to the next song, and then Derek came back after throwing up. But I'll just, I'll never forget sitting down and like just the most pressure situation I've ever been in, you know, talking to Stevie Wonder, like, good.
Well, I'm sure, and I guarantee that as soon as he heard your voice and was expecting Derek's voice, that his little head wag just stopped for a second, like, what was that? What was that? You know, he's not used to surprises like that.
Stevie, if you want to do Isn't She Lovely, that's on the set list next. No, it wasn't that bad. But
that's cool, though.
Anyway, we're going to be wrapping it up right now. Raj, thank you for joining us. It was great. You know,
all right. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, it was fun. And you're going to be doing American Idol tour.
Yep.
And that's going to – do you know how long that tour is going to be out for?
Mid-September.
Wow.
And so who is on the tour? Is it the last 10 contestants?
Yeah, top 10.
Top 10, including the winner?
Including the winner.
Cool.
Yeah, they get the big spot.
Yeah, I bet. So who, not the opening act.
So who won? No, I'm just kidding. All right. Well, hey, Rob, are you working on anything you can talk about? Or you...
I'm working on a few things I will be able to talk about soon, but I will say the Orbit Monkey album is up on iTunes.
Oh, great.
And we're about to start doing some big promotion for it, but if you want to be the first and your family to buy it, it's on iTunes.
Hey, one of these days I'm going to say, Rob, you have anything to talk about? And he's going to just go on for like an hour.
Well, you know what?
All this stuff he can't talk about?
You know, someday if we do like the non-disclosure cast where we just sit and list all the things we're not allowed to talk about, I'll be able to take half the show. But nobody I work with wants me to talk about anything.
Bobby, how about yourself?
I'm doing a promo package for Disney for their soaps, daytime soaps.
Great.
Scrubs.
Forrest, what are you playing on anything fun and exciting?
He's supposed to play on mine. I didn't call him because I could think – anyway, don't worry.
I just returned from doing a few shows with a singer from Japan who born and raised in New York City and Tokyo, named Utada Hikaru.
Right.
And she just released her second U.S. album or English release, trying to get over in Europe and the U.S. But she sold 52 million records worldwide so far,
wow.
So really hoping for
it. Great.
I mean, you get tickets.
Huh?
We get tickets.
Hey, as soon as I find out, I'll win.
Scott, how about yourself? I know you're Crank. You've got Crank coming.
Crank's coming out any day now. Crank High Voltage.
I can't wait to see that. That just looks fun.
Yeah, it is. It's Looney Tunes for adults. Citizen Game I finished. That comes out in September. And I just started Season of the Witch. So
great.
Yeah.
So we'll have a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's nonstop.
Cool. Well, hey, if you have any questions or comments, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Or you can catch us on our Facebook page, and the link is going to be up on our website. So I couldn't tell you what the URL is because it's a bunch of numbers and a bunch of slashes and things like that. But just look for the link. And, you know, I want to thank I want to thank the people that are watching right now on the Ustream as we do our tests. we picked up a couple people. Right now Vanessa she's clapping very loud. She just told me, you know, and so she made it to the, and she's back on the East Coast, you know, she's back there.
It's late.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like
1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the sound for you, Vanessa. bad thing with crickets.
Oh, nicely done.
So so we're going to be going live in the next podcast or so with open this up to everybody, and we're going to promo it. So it'll be kind of fun, and they'll be able to ask us questions and talk back to us and basically laugh at us.
See,
in real time.
If we start doing the video, we have to do it in different places. And, yeah.
That's fine.
Or at least put
Monte it Carlo.
We're sitting here in Times Square.
And last but not least, I want to thank.
Nice shot, you know.
I want to thank Raj for joining us, Raj. And Raj. Let's give Raj a round of applause. Giving us some inside scoop on all the tours and stuff. All right, well, gang, for myself and all the guys here, you know, have a good one, and we'll see you next time.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbatier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaolo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.